You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Did you guys hear about that lady at the Ryder Cup last weekend? Some golfer drove a ball into the gallery and it hit a lady and her eyeball exploded.
Would you like be willing to have your eye be exploded for the Bills to win the Super Bowl?
I would not.
It'd be exactly like the Ryder Cup scenario. It's not like somebody, like, you're waiting for somebody to explode your eye. It's just like, it just happens.
I still vote though, for me.
Where else would you rather be than right here?
Welcome to the Circling the Wagons podcast, a podcast discussing the Bills all year round with interviews, news, recaps, and insightful fan discussion. Most times. Here's your host and lifelong Bills fan, Nate.
Welcome to another episode of the Circling the Wagons podcast, the only podcast that doesn't care if you win a game by throwing for less than 100 yards, because a win is a win, baby. I'm your host, Nate, and this is our Recap Edition podcast, where we will discuss the Bills scraping a win out of the Tennessee Titans 13-12 today, a new era field to go 2-3. If you are new to our podcast, we recap every game of the Bills season, give our thoughts, weigh in on the outcome, and celebrate or commiserate together. A lot of celebrating to do today. We also have some huge news for the podcast after our recap that we are excited to finally announce. But right now, I'm joined by my co-hosts and high school buddies, John and Mike. Fellas, are you ready to discuss this victory?
Where else would you rather be than right here, right now?
Nice, John. What about you, Mike?
He took the words right out of my mouth, Nate. What a win.
Yeah, what a win indeed. This was the second home game for the Bills so far this season. And compared to the game last week where they lost against the Green Bay Packers 22-0, I was just looking for some offensive production, any sort of spark, really, to get this team going. They just couldn't get anything going last week. And we know that the Bills always play better at home under Sean McDermott. Last season, they were 6-2. This season, they've been 0-1, the loss against the Chargers. But as we talked about before on that podcast, it was a tale of two halves. And really, you know, just kind of seeing if they could start again what they did in Minnesota. And they did. They started off right from the beginning of the game and got a turnover. And the offense started to move the ball, which is great. They got a touchdown on the opening drive. And things just started to go their way on the defense. The defense was great again. Really not allowing a lot of points on offense either from the Tennessee Titans. And, you know, I was looking this game, I really wanted the Bills to take less sacks. I was looking to the offensive line to protect Josh Allen more. The Bills came into this game leading the NFL with 21 sacks, which is by far the worst by 4 sacks in the rest of the league. So I was really looking for them to step up, and I thought they did a good job today. Pass protection and run blocking, which the running game got going for the first time this season. So what did you guys think about it?
Yeah. Absolutely. Going into it, I was thinking that it was going to be a close game, like a one-score game. I did predict the Bills' victory. It was much closer than I thought it was going to be, obviously only being a one-point game. But, you know, the defense really showed up. They didn't allow any touchdowns. You know, the offense could have produced a little bit better, but I could see the game plan. They decided to run the ball much more, which actually really worked well. McCoy had double-digit rushes for the first time this season. He had 9 carries, was a season high before this game. Yeah, I think it was good. I mean, the special teams obviously left a little bit to be desired, especially in the first half. But overall, they pulled it out in the end.
Well, it seemed like the play calling, like John alluded to, like the coaching staff finally playing to the Bills' strengths, right? And Tennessee is a good team, like definitely beatable, but they're streaking. They won their last three against the Texans, the Jags, who are for real, recently beat the Pats, and then they beat the Eagles, the defending Super Bowl champs last week. So I think we're used to thinking of Tennessee a little bit more of a doormat prior to Mariota. You don't circle Tennessee on the schedule like some of these other first-class teams, but they are a team on the upswing. They are for real. And for the Bills to get this one, I think it validates also the win in Minnesota, because around the league, people, one win is nothing, right? It could be a total fluke, but to beat Tennessee was huge.
That's what she said.
Yeah. Speaking of that,
we'll put a laugh track in there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll put a laugh track in, make it funny somehow. It's funny that you mentioned that, Mike, is that when I got an alert on my phone from the NFL.com app after the game saying that Buffalo shocked the NFL, the NFL world once again with a big win over the upstart Titans. And I think it really does go along with what you said, Mike, about validating the Bills' win over Minnesota. Because the Titans were 3-1 going into this game with new head coach Mike Vrabel. They were 3.5-point favorites. And nobody expects the Bills team to win. So whenever they do win, it's a big deal. So it was good to see that wasn't just a fluke, that game that they had won in Minnesota. It was a good win. And John, I like your point about the running game finally getting going and helping out Josh Allen from having to win the game on his arm and just rely on that porous offensive line to protect him, because it hasn't. And it didn't do an amazing job today, but they limited the amount of pass attempts. I kind of think it was a similar game plan to what they used last year. And that's kind of how they went 9-7 last year. They used the running game as a strength and use the passing game when needed.
Well, McCoy had 85 yards, right? Which matched his total for the whole rest of the season. Like, that's incredible. Most dynamic player usually on the field. Like, he's a great running back, and you could see that today. You saw glimmers of the player that he could be when they feed him the ball, right? He's just in space. He can't be tackled. He just sheds people.
Yeah, you know, John's been banging on the table all season for McCoy to get more touches. And Mike, you brought up last week that the Bills really needed to change up the offensive game plan and incorporate more short passes, some out routes, some slants, and dump-offs, which put less strain on Allen and the offensive line in general. But not only that, the defense, which had been playing well since, I think, the second half of the Chargers game, came up really strong today and really just limited the Titans on offense.
The fumbles were huge, right? The takeaways, like the Bills D had 8 takeaways the last 3 games, which is huge. Flip the field, steal the momentum. Tennessee has been really good about hanging on to the ball, right? 0 fumbles the last 4 games, and the Bills D got them for 2 today.
Yeah, the Bills had that one interception, too, from Taron Johnson, one of our Wall of Famers from last week's podcast. I thought the offense was much more aggressive than in previous weeks. There were multiple times when McDermott went for it on 4th down in Titans territory, especially after being criticized for punting it on 4th down in Packers territory last week. Let's talk about the special teams. I thought the special teams was pretty awful for most of the game. Steven Hauschka excluded, of course. I thought they really cost the Bills in terms of field position. For a lot of the game, the punt coverage was just atrocious for everything but that one play towards the end of the game. That's not even including that botched punt. I mean, geez, guys, let's talk about that botched punt. I mean, you have Corey Bajorquez taking the snap for like a chip shot field goal. It was like at the Titans 12-yard line right before the half, right? And instead of just taking the snap and letting Hauschka kick the ball, he takes a snap and acts like he's going to throw the ball as if it's a fake field goal. But it ends up being not a fake field goal because there's absolutely nobody going out for a pass at all. And it's like he realized it at the last second and then pulls it back down. But by then, Steven Hauschka can't kick it because he's already run past the ball. And so then he tries to run it or throw it to nobody or an alignment. I have no idea. It was just, it was pretty awful. And it was just a botch on an epic level. What'd you guys think?
It was definitely very bizarre. The holder was obviously the only guy who thought it was a fake punt or fake field goal. Sorry. Yeah. He just screwed up. There was some sort of miscommunication there.
You'd think on something like that, on such a rare play, you'd double check, right? Like, you sure? Just to make sure.
Afterwards, right? Like that last field goal, they're like, you're definitely holding it on this, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, we're going for the field goal, right? Like, not trying to do some sort of fake field goal touchdown pass with 3 seconds left in the game, right? Now, we were talking about McDermott being aggressive. Now, that would have been aggressive and ballsy, going for a fake field goal touchdown pass from the 30-yard line.
Well, speaking of that, like, on that drive, right? So, I'm all for going for it on fourth and whatever. When it's too long for a field goal and too short for a punt, go for it, right? Like they did in that first fourth down conversion. The second one, I thought, oh, just go for the field goal, right? And they ended up calling a timeout and this and that. They wasted a couple of timeouts on that and on that drive. They ended up converting, which is great. Okay, fine. They made it. And they, get down. And on that drive, wasn't there a QB sneak that a play that stuck out in my head where there was like a questionable challenge maybe the other team could have done, but they just ran out and tried to do a real quick QB sneak. That's the play that I think is highly questionable, right? It's like basically a waste of a down. It's like first and 10, a QB sneak for a yard. You know, the Bills should, like, if they're worried about the other team challenging a play, they want to get the ball off quickly. They should have a play, even if it's just a running play, from the running back, like McCoy, not like a QB sneak on first and 10, where more than like 0 or 1 yards, right? Like that's like a waste of a down.
Like if you're playing a video game, it's a halfback dive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I think that I was just happy from a Bills fan perspective that they had the wherewithal to know that the call was going to be questionable and the first down might go against them. So they ran up to the line and just ran a play just so that the other team couldn't really look at it more thoroughly and challenge the play. But yeah, John, I definitely see your point. I think that they should have a better play in mind other than a QB dive, because what are they going to get? Maybe 1 yard, maybe? Whereas, a halfback dive or any very simple running play could get 4 or 5 yards and make the second down easier. This way, they basically gave up a down and got almost no yardage. So now they're in second and long.
Like, John's point is a very good one, right? Like, have a default. Like, everybody should know, like, oh, if a questionable call, here's what we're doing for this game.
It doesn't matter what it is. You can snap the ball just as quickly, regardless of the play. Just know the play.
Yeah, yeah, I get it. Point made. So let's go to our stats and numbers of the game. This segment is brought to you by our TeePublic store. You want to find some Bills gear that you literally can't find anywhere else on the internet for cheap price? Check out teepublic.com/stores/ctwpod. 30% off sale this week, so check that out. Again, teepublic.com/stores/ctwpod. Some interesting stats of the game. See, I didn't know this while watching this game, just because I thought the Bills were able to move the ball decently. I know they weren't putting up a ton of points, but Josh Allen, 10 for 19, only 82 yards passing today, one interception. I thought it would have been a little bit more than that. Maybe not 200 or 300 yard game, but more than 82. So that's kind of surprising. John, you mentioned LeSean McCoy today having a good day on the ground. He had 24 carries for 85 yards. Chris Ivory had 14 carries for 43 yards. So if you include all the carries today by LeSean McCoy, Chris Ivory, Josh Allen, that one by Ray McCloud, you would have 43 carries on the day, which is amazing. I don't know what their record is for the season, but that's a lot. Yardage wise, on the Titans side of the ball, Marcus Mariota had only 129 yards passing and an interception. Team wise, total yardage, it was definitely more of a defensive game. Only 221 yards for Tennessee and 223 yards total yards for the Buffalo Bills. And I know, John, there were a couple of stats that you wanted to mention as far as this game goes.
A few things I had have already somewhat been mentioned. That McDermott is now 7-3 at home with the Bills, which is really good. And then the other one was McCoy, right? So, like, prior to this week, his highest number of carries was 9, and today he had 24. So I thought that was really big for the Bills. That helped a lot. He's obviously a very dynamic player, including his receiving yards. He had over 100 yards for today. I mean, you got to keep giving him the ball, right?
Yeah, I'd say LeSean McCoy should be touching the ball at least, what, like 20 touches a game?
He had 26 today. Before today, he had 13 was as high.
Well, you know, that was something we brought up last week, is that even, you know, way into the fourth quarter of the Packers game, they were in it. You know, they could have won that game if the offense could do anything. So I don't know why they got away from the run so quickly. You know, obviously, LeSean McCoy being healthy and all. All right, let's transition to the segment of the podcast where we discuss plays of the game that stood out to us. One that stood out to me and probably didn't matter in the end was in the first quarter when the Bills had the ball at 4th-and-3 at the Tennessee 40, and they decided to do a hard count, which is what it looked like at least, and Josh Allen got called for that false start by bobbing his head or whatever. I thought that was a terrible call, first of all, because all quarterbacks do that. And then second of all, I think that if it was truly a hard count, I just don't like that play. I think it works rarely, if ever at all. And I think that's one of those old school coaching techniques that the defensive coaches do to, you know, hopefully draw the defense off sides. But I think I've seen it happen like once or twice in all the years I've watched football. What about you guys? Were there any plays that stood out to you?
How about that Hughes play where he let up on the sack?
The sack that wasn't.
Right? Like, totally thinking that, well, I should let up because I'm going to get a penalty. 15 yards, they're going to get a first down. And, of course, it has been, you know, backed out of it, and it was incomplete, but anyway, that could have been a huge play.
Yeah, that was a play where Jerry Hughes had Marcus Mariota wrapped up, but didn't actually take him down out of fear, I guess, that he might get a penalty for, you know, holding him on too long or putting whatever the ridiculous rule is now about putting more than 50% of your body weight on the quarterback.
He forgot to bring it onto the field to lay him down on. So,
yeah. I thought it looked like he thought Mariota got rid of the ball. Did you guys see that at all?
I didn't see that. It's definitely possible. I thought it was just Jerry Hughes trying not to get a penalty, a Clay Matthews-like penalty by sacking the guy or hitting him too hard or whatever. But it might have been the way that you just mentioned. So there was that play. There was the unsportsmanlike misconduct play against Josh Allen when he was throwing the ball on third down. It would have been a fourth down, but he got shoved to the ground by a Tennessee Titans player after he let the ball go. What was weird is the announcers were definitely against that call. They thought that it was a kind of a ticky-tacky sort of roughing the passer call, but really, I mean, Josh Allen had let go of the ball and he was out of bounds, yet he still got shoved to the ground. And, you know, I'm definitely not for the NFL coddling quarterbacks and not letting them take hits at all. But I mean, that was warranted. He didn't have to shove him. The ball was out of his hands for a few seconds, it seemed like. And I thought that he could have easily let up on that play and not shoved him to the ground. Yet the announcers were totally against it, and they thought it was kind of a ticky-tack penalty. Did you guys think it was warranted at all?
Yeah, no doubt. That was definitely a penalty. And even the referee expert that they brought on to the broadcast afterwards said, you know, he took two steps and then he shoved them. So it was definitely a penalty. And, you know, a few plays later when they called a penalty on Dawkins, that was a penalty, right? That personal foul, that wasn't really explained or replayed.
Dude, I loved that play by Deion Dawkins. After Josh Allen took that hit, first of all, there was a little bit of a scuffle on the Titans sideline, which is something that you never used to see from a Bills team if a quarterback or anyone got a late hit against them. Like, look at Tre'Davious White last season. Nobody stuck up for him against Gronk. Things like that. I love that the Bills, I think that it speaks a couple of different levels. I feel like this is a different nature of the team than it was in previous seasons. And also, maybe this is how much they really like and respect Josh Allen because of that next play, John, where it looked like Deion Dawkins clubbed whoever that was in the Titans that shoved Josh Allen to the ground. I thought that was awesome. I thought that was great. It was encouraging. It was great to see that kind of heart and grit that, to be honest, has been kind of lacking from the Bills in previous seasons. Oh, John, do you have a play?
Yes, I do have one. On the one Josh Allen interception, Andre Holmes was the intended receiver. I kind of thought that he could have, you know, kind of fought for that ball, been a little bit more aggressive on that play. And I think that just speaks to, you know, their wide receiver woes throughout the year so far.
Yeah, that's pretty much par for the course for Andre Holmes this season. He's been pretty much a disappointment. He's forced into a number two or number three role at wide receiver, which he shouldn't be in. Josh Allen threw a very accurate ball on that one, a catchable ball, and he just didn't fight for it. And he's just, I don't know, it's been par for the course for Andre Holmes. And the rest of the receiving core has been pretty much a disappointment all season. Kelvin Benjamin, Zay Jones, everyone like that. So yeah, good point. That INT really shouldn't have counted against Josh Allen, but it obviously does. One of the plays I was going to bring up was that pass by Mariota to that wide receiver in the end zone, and it just went through both hands, and that easily could have been the game. I don't remember the wide receiver's name for the Titans.
That was Nick Williams, drafted free agent from Connecticut.
cool. Nice tidbit, Mike. But yeah, it was nice to see that play go in the Bills' favor. You know, I feel like in years past, we would see that go against the Bills. So yeah, Mike, were there any plays that stuck out to you?
Yeah, with about 3 minutes left in the game, third down, the pass to McCoy was huge. That was a play of the game. Taking off tacklers, I think it was 12, 13 yards, just brought life into the team. At that moment, you're like, we're going to win this game.
Yeah, he looked like the LeSean McCoy of old, getting that first down and extending that play to help them win the game. So yeah, good call, Mike.
And I think kind of piggybacking off of things that have been said with the running game, McCoy is awesome, feed him the ball, but Chris Ivory's impressed me. He's an idyllic change of pace back. Just, he's got to get his touches, and Bruiser, he beats up the defense.
Yeah, we haven't brought up Chris Ivory a whole lot, but he's definitely that great change of pace, plodding running back. I think he's basically the guy that we wanted Mike Tolbert to be last season, but instead he was Mike Tolbert. So yeah, good call on Chris Ivory, Mike.
So actually, this was actually from Sal Capaccio, the stat. So Chris Ivory had 14 carries. 9 of those carries were for either a first down or were on the critical final drive of the game where he gained 22 yards and led to that field goal at the end of the game. So obviously very, you know, very useful in that game.
Nice. And thank you, John, for that stat. And now we're going to go to our portion of the podcast where we discuss our Wall of Famers for the game. So who stood out to you on offense, defense, coaching that deserves to be put on your Wall of Fame? I'll go first on my Wall of Fame. I don't know if it's going to be popular or not, but Steven Hauschka, I mean, the guy drilling that 46-yard field goal to win it. I know in years past with other kickers, we would have been biting our fingernails. We didn't think it would happen. And then, you know, with the Steven Hauschka signing, which has been one of the best free agent signings the Bills have had in recent years, I mean, he's just so reliable. And I just wasn't worried. I mean, you never know for sure that it's going to go through, but I didn't sit back there wondering if he was going to make it. I felt confident going into that game, 12-10, the Bills kicking that field goal to win it. And I'm like, yeah, I think this is going to happen. So it would have actually surprised me had he not made that 46-yard field goal, which is not a short field goal by any means. So yeah, I Hauschka has definitely got to go on my Wall of Fame. What about you, John?
I agree 100%. I was initially thinking defensive player, you know, they didn't let up any touchdowns. But Hauschka coming through at the end, especially with, like, the shenanigans with the holder, like, messing up the other field goal, like, having that in the back of his head, like, what if he screws this one up? Like, didn't throw him off his game at all. It was fine. He did it, and they won.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Sometimes it feels like Hauschka has ice water in his veins, which is great. Mike, what about you? Who's on your Wall of Fame?
I want to go somewhere else desperately. I can't, though. When they got within range, you knew it was over. You knew. And what other player on the Bills has been like that over the last decade, right? Hauschka was an amazing signing. We're so lucky to have him. You knew that kick was going in.
Nice. All three for Steven Hauschka. Did not see that one coming. Okay, I'd also like to give an honorable mention to Jerry Hughes. I know I've been kind of dogging Jerry Hughes this whole offseason, saying that he really needed to play up to his contract. I mean, the guy only had the most sacks that he had the last three seasons was six. And I know that he does a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, but ever since the second half of that Chargers game, man, the guy's been lights out. He's been one of the highest-rated edge defenders on Pro Football Focus, and he showed it again today, had a lot of pressure, had a sack on Marcus Mariota and almost had another one and hasn't had any stupid penalties against him. So, I mean, say what you will. I obviously have said in the offseason, I think he's doing great. He has definitely stepped up and shown a different level, which, I don't know, we haven't seen in a few years since Mario Williams was here. So that's great to see. I'd like to give him an honorable mention. John, do you have someone?
Yes, actually, I have two honorable mentions. Ooh. I thought that defensive tackle Jordan Phillips, they picked up off of waivers, formerly of the Dolphins this week. He had two tackles for a loss this game. I thought he made an impact. Also, Micah Hyde was out. His backup, Bush, was out. And Marlowe, who they brought up from the practice squad, came in. And I thought he had a pretty decent game, all things considered, especially with Mariota and the weapons that he has.
Absolutely, John. Mike, do you have any honorable mentions?
I have three honorable mentions, Nate. No, it's called the Wall of Fame for a reason. There's one guy you pick. We picked Hauschka. I have no one else. Buttering down an award.
Yeah, man. Hey, everyone gets a trophy, right? So, okay, so we gave our Wall of Famers and honorable mentions, and now we're going to go to the exact opposite side of the spectrum. And even though the Bills won, there were still parts of the game that definitely they could have done a little bit better. So let's start with on my wall of lame for the game is got to be special teams. I thought that, you know, minus Steven Hauschka's 46-yard field goal, we already talked about that Corey Borroquez miscue on the fake field goal, which could have easily cost them the game. Luckily, it didn't. I thought the punt coverage was awful, as I mentioned earlier. Deion Lacy just had a really rough game in punt coverage. He did have that one ball that was downed on the 4-yard line towards the end of the game, but he whiffed on a huge punt return early in the game, and he's just been looking out of place this season so far. And this disappointing in general, because this coaching staff and front office has placed a lot of emphasis on special teams with the players that they've drafted, the players that they've, you know, picked up in free agency. So I guess I would have expected the special teams to be a little bit better than they were or than they have been, especially with so much invested in there. So I guess I would have to say special teams should go on my wall of lame. John, what about you? Who goes on your wall of lame?
And I completely agree. Special teams. I think Danny Crossman, I don't know why he's still on the team as a coach after all these years. The coverage units, especially in the first half, were really poor. Obviously, the miscommunication for the fake field goal attempts that only the holder thought was the fake field goal, that was pretty bad. And I agree with you on the mismanagement of the roster with special teams. I think not even just coming into the season, but like week to week with like who's on the inactive list, they're favoring special teamers over other guys who could be contributing on offense or defense.
You guys are totally wrong. You can't say, oh, the special teams, but accept all the greatest plays, right? Like you can't equivocate like that, right? They downed the ball at the 4, which is basically getting the ball back, which they did, which is awesome, which was great to see. They kicked the game-winning field goal, right? I mean, the Green Bay kicker, Crosby, right? We missed 5 kicks today. That's a special teams lamer. The wall of lamer is the receiving core, specifically Kelvin Benjamin, who didn't show up again today, right? It's all on McCoy and Josh Allen, who had to have his third rushing touchdown of the young season. And if we could get some receivers, it would be a completely different offense and completely different game plan week to week. And we could play with some of these teams in higher scoring games.
The wide receiver core has been a major disappointment this season, and I think we're kind of going to see that from week to week. So that's why I didn't have them mentioned, but as always, Mike, great points. But I'd just like to switch gears real quick to the big announcement for our podcast. So along with the Bills winning this week, we have some great news on the podcast as well. This last Thursday, it became official that the Circling the Wagons podcast became the flagship podcast of the Buffalo Rumblings podcast network as part of SB Nation and Vox Media. If you were a subscriber before this last week, you'll notice our podcast logo, our Circling the Wagons podcast logo, was replaced by the Buffalo Rumblings / SB Nation logo. So that's how it's going to look from now on. Circling the Wagons should be the logo that you see when you click on the episode itself, but will also be in the title of each show. On a personal level, this is something that we're very excited about. Not only is Buffalo Rumblings a great site for all Bills news all the time, but it's one of our personal favorite sites. I know that when I was done with school a few years ago, when Brian had started the site, it was one of the few places that you could get Buffalo Bills news 24/7, because other than that, it was just buffalobills.com, which is obviously a slight bias towards the team, or, you know, it was something major that happened for the Buffalo Bills that got on CBS or ESPN, and it usually wasn't something good. So this was up to the minute information on everything Buffalo Bills. They have a huge following, and it just gives us a chance to reach more people. And to, you know, it's something that we're excited about. Our podcast is only going to get better from here. And yeah. So thanks to Maverick Warren. And we're excited to be part of this podcast network. So one thing I want to stress, that although this is, you know, just us three, and, you know, we're going to do interviews and stuff as time goes on in the off season when we're not doing recaps during the season, and we'll make it a fun off season show for you guys. But one thing I want to stress is this is a podcast for all Bills fans. So this is as much your podcast as it is ours. I want you guys to feel free to email us and tweet us, and we'll do our best to read what you guys send us and make you guys a part of this show. You know, because even though we're the hosts and producing it, unlike other podcasts out there, we aren't media members. We are fans first and foremost. And I know that you guys all are, especially if you're listening to this and you're following Buffalo Rumblings. So I just wanted to thank Buffalo Rumblings for reaching out to us. And we're excited on this venture. And yeah, it's going to be fun. So final thoughts on the game, guys. What do you think?
I think we buried the lead with the podcast, right? Like, this, the Bills have a great, with this win, they have a great chance of making the playoffs. If you're 2-3, you have a 23% chance of making it. And if you go 1-4, you have a 5% chance. Like, that's incredible. So I don't think it's overstating it to say that this really saved the season, this game.
Yeah, right now they're in control of their own destiny. They are only one game behind the AFC East division leaders. The Dolphins and the Patriots are 3-2. They are 2-3. They're one game out. They're right in the thick of it. Yeah, this might have been a deciding game that could help them make the playoffs when all is said and done. So yeah, let's look at next week. Even the next game is against the 2-3 Houston Texans in Houston at 1 p.m. And it is a very winnable game.
It's winnable. They're a very dangerous team at the same time.
Yes, absolutely. But we are looking forward to the game this Sunday against the Texans. So for John,
let's go Bills, 13-3 Super Bowl.
For Mike,
winning streak.
And for me, Nate, go Bills. Thanks for listening. We're excited to be part of Buffalo Rumblings and SB Nation, and we look forward to recapping the game with you next week against the Houston Texans.
Thank you for listening to the Circling the Wagons podcast. Download and subscribe to us in your favorite podcast service. Email us at ctwpod@gmail.com. That's Charlie Tango Whiskey Pod @gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at ctwpod. And most importantly, go Bills!
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills.